Welcome to the Impart Podcast, where patients from New Brunswick talk to us about living with obesity, cancer, diabetes, cardiovascular, and other medical conditions. We'll also delve into related topics such as patient outcomes, our health industry, our community, and the role technology is playing in all of it. It is a candid, often personal, more humane discussion about the health of not just one New Brunswicker, but the health of every one of us. Hi, my name is Hans Colburn, and I am the host of the Impart Podcast, and my guest today is Roxanne Cole. Hello, Roxanne.
Hi, Hans. Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you as well. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a St. Johner, born and bred, but not raised here, but I was raised in a little community called Bath in Carleton County in Midwestern New Brunswick. And I've probably been across most of the country working at different jobs, and I have actually come back to St. John, I believe, this last time would have made four times. So I will say I'm a dedicated St. Johner.
You've been back and forth a few times.
I've been back and forth.
So tell me about the health issue that we're going to be talking about today.
Actually, it would be lung cancer. And I was diagnosed in October of 2010 while I was on a work term assignment out in Vancouver.
So this was one of the times that you were away from St. John?
This was one of the times that I was away.
So you were diagnosed with cancer while in Vancouver?
Yes.
Was it a surprise?
Very much so. I had a lung infection and it just wouldn't seem to go away. I had a recurring cough, a little bronchial, which was nothing unusual for me because I am like that. And I've always had a bit of bronchitis and chest infections off and on as a child. So I went to my family doctor there. They suspected I may have pneumonia. So they sent me for a chest x-ray and it came back with a 2-centimeter mass in my lower left lung.
How did you feel when you found that out?
Well, I didn't really know what to think, say, or do. I just was kind of, I felt like I was on automatic pilot because I had this gentleman who I didn't really know that well because I'd only been in Vancouver a year and just happened to get him as a family doctor by default, not by design, for sure. And he's telling me, you have a neoplasm in your left lung. And I'm first off thinking, neoplasm, what is that? Like, what's the English language here? And so then when he explained it to me, and I'm thinking, I don't smoke. How could I have lung cancer? Like, I'm just okay. And I just like was in denial, which I think a lot of people are when you first hear those words. And he never really said you have cancer. So he said, you have a neoplasm, so we have to find out what it is.
And that's a rare form of cancer?
What I had was actually fairly rare because what it ended up being was called a lung carcinoid. And they're classified into typical and atypical. So I had a typical, which I was told at the time was one of the better things to have, lung carcinoid. And from what I understand in the research and what I remember being told, less than about 3% of the population get carcinoids in their lungs. They usually happen in your GI tract or your abdominal cavity or somewhere in there, not in your lung.
So before those symptoms that you experienced in Vancouver, was there any indication that there was something wrong with your lungs?
Well, I thought there was something wrong because I was coughing up blood. So I knew that wasn't normal. And they had suspected maybe it was TB because there was a history of TB in my family. And not really kind of sure of what it was, but I knew it wasn't normal. I thought I have to get this checked out.
Certainly. When you were, before you even went to Vancouver, was there anything that doctors had noticed about your lungs that said maybe there might be something there?
Yes. And that's where I think there was kind of a little gap in the system.
And that would have been when you were here in New Brunswick?
Yes, I was actually living in Fredericton at the time. And I remember quite well the time in 2007, I had went to see my family doctor for the results of a chest x-ray. And she said that everything looked fine. And her words were, there's a small lesion in your left lung, but she said, I'm not concerned. She said, it's not unusual to see that in someone who has had recurrent infections, pneumonia like I have had. So she said, we'll just keep an eye on it. So I put my faith and my trust in her, and I thought, okay, she's going to keep an eye on it. I never thought really any more about it, whether it was faulty on my part to not be more proactive and follow up. I just kind of let things go. I had no other symptoms after I got rid of my chest infection. I was teaching fitness classes. I felt fine. I could breathe good. So away I went on my own merry way. She never suggested another chest x-ray. And the next thing I know, I'm in Vancouver. And 3-4 years later, I have this neoplasm in my lung.
In your left lung.
In my left lung, yeah.
What was your journey like from that diagnosis to the treatment?
Well, the first thing I thought was, I'm dying, of course. And I think that goes through everybody's mind, you know, because things seem to move along, Hans, out there in that province so fast. Like, I went.
So it was alarming that things are, they were precipitating,
yes,
so quickly.
Yes, it was. And I'm thinking, okay, I am dying because I'm going right up the street for a CT scan. I don't have to wait. I'm coming back to see him in 3 days for the results. He's booking an appointment for me to see the pulmonologist. And like, I'm not even having time to digest this. So, of course, I'm thinking, if I was back home now, I don't know if things would be happening that fast. So I went, I got the CT scan, came back. The results were that it was a cancerous, what they are hoping or thinking, typical lung carcinoid. But again, they said, we can't be sure. So it's like, when am you going to be sure? Like, do I have it or don't I have it? I think that's one of the things that I found the most confusing was no one was ever sure until like 2 weeks down the road because there's so much you have to go through. I had the CT scan. Then I had to meet with him. Then I had to go see the pulmonologist. Then they ordered the biopsy, which was a bronchoscopy. And then I had to go to the path lab. So this all happened, though, within a 3 week span. I did get the diagnosis.
Within 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Wow.
And so then once I met with the pulmonologist again, he said, here's what you have. He was a wonderful man. He's since retired. I think the world of him. He was not comical in the sense that he was making fun of the situation. But he got to know me a little bit about as a person because I thought that was very unusual for a lung specialist to be saying, well, what do you like to do? And yada, yada, yada. And he said, do you golf? And I said, because he golfed and there were pictures of golfers, I don't know them, on the wall. And I told him, this happened to be in November. And I told him, I said, listen, I just bought 2 tickets to see Bon Jovi. I said, in March. On the 25th and the 26th, I need to be better so I can see them. So each time I come in, he would bring that up. And I thought that was like, God, wow, you know.
And you were better by March.
I was much better by March. I was better like 6 weeks after I had surgery. So to just back up a little bit, when I met with him, he said, you're going to go see the surgeon. I went to see the surgeon. He said, he's going to lead you through what's going to happen. I didn't ask about chemo or radiation. I was just trying to process. Okay, now I got to have surgery. So here I am in Vancouver. I don't know how many kilometers it is away from St. John, but I'm clear across country. I have no family out there, no friends, nothing like that. And I'm going in for lung surgery. I'll tell you. The faith was tested. And so when I met with a surgeon, I think that would have been the longest kind of time that I waited from the time I went to see them in October, met the pulmonologist and got all that done, seen the surgeon. I think I waited maybe 3 weeks to get in to see the surgeon. And he scheduled my surgery 3 weeks later. So I was diagnosed in October of 2010, and I was operated on January 3rd of 2011. So that was kind of like the little time span.
That seems awfully fast.
It was very fast. And when I met the surgeon, I didn't realize till after the fact how lucky I was to have had him, because he kind of was one of the surgeons who spearheaded this VATS surgery. So I was able to be operated on with what they call video-assisted thoracic surgery. So I have a small incision underneath my left arm. I don't have a big incision across my back, which is kind of par for the course if you have any kind of surgery on your lung. And so I didn't have to have any chemo, no radiation. He took out my lower left lobe. It was completely resected. The path report came back clear, and I went on my merry way and was back to work on the 12th day of February. I felt fine. I just had a bit of discomfort on my left side, but I could go back to work with light duties, and I thought, that's it. It's behind me. Well, it wasn't, but I thought that's what it was.
So tell me about that in terms of how you felt better a month later. Did it continue to affect your quality of life?
It was the emotions that started to affect the quality of life. I guess I kind of, in a way, thought to myself, okay. So I went to see the surgeon for my follow-up 6 weeks. The follow-up was excellent. If I can just digress for a minute and go back. The follow-up was excellent. I got a CT scan every 6 months for 2 years. And I was with that surgeon, and he was just amazing. He followed everything. And I remember one of my conversations with him, maybe about a year after, I said, well, I guess I'm not going to die. And he said, well, you're not going to die from this. So he said, you better get busy living. And I thought, okay, so now what do I do? So I had a hard time pulling out of the what could have been, what might have happened. What do I do now? I'm not going to die from this, probably. So where do I go from here? Because for 3-4 months, my whole world was about blood tests, x-rays, appointments, scans. And even though the time frame wasn't as long as it could have been in another province, it was a lot to handle and process, and not having any support systems. I had very few. So that was where my challenge came in, was how to deal with the kind of like emotional convalescence that comes after the fact.
How did you deal with it?
Well, again, I have to go back to the services that they had out there. The BC Cancer Agency was phenomenal. Everyone who was in, they had a wonderful group of lung cancer survivors, and they kind of all mentored and took on new cancer survivors, especially from lungs. There were 2 or 3 nurse practitioners that worked in counseling people after having cancer, and they dealt particularly with lung cancer, especially women in lung cancer. And I'm not really sure why that was. I never really kind of investigated why lung cancer got more of a kind of a attention. I knew the breast cancer group out there was phenomenal, but lung cancer, I guess more and more women are getting lung cancer, and especially women who are non-smokers. So I got some good therapy, some good help, a wonderful priest, and basically I just had to start building up myself again from, I guess, that scared little 6-year-old girl who's like, okay, I want my mommy and daddy, I don't know what to do, to the like 55-year-old woman that I was when all of this went down, so to speak. And it was a journey. It might have been more of a journey than the actual physical part of it. because I was in their hands. And if we look at the healthcare system and look at where people are in their mind when they get a diagnosis like that, or when they hear that news, you're so vulnerable. And being vulnerable really is a courageous place to be, because you're just out there. It's like you have put yourself out there. I'm at your hands because I don't know what to do. You got to guide me. So I think looking back now, I can see where maybe I should have taken a more proactive approach on certain things, and I will in the future.
With your own healthcare?
With my own healthcare, because I think it's important to not let yourself fall through the cracks. Because if I would have been more proactive back in 2007, when I heard you have a small lesion in your lung, I could have probably saved myself this. So maybe, maybe not, but there'll always be that question.
You do work in the healthcare industry here in New Brunswick.
I do. Yeah.
So knowing what you know about the industry and about the system here, do you think the care would have been different here for you?
Time-wise, yes. And I can only base that on what I've seen some relatives and friends go through in terms of how long things took for them. Now, they didn't have the same kind of cancer I had. They have had different situations. But I did have an aunt who was diagnosed not that long after I was, only with a total different cancer. And hers had progressed a little bit more than mine had. And like I said, it was a different cancer. She's since passed away from it. But when I look at the length it took her to go through the diagnosis, treatment, et cetera, surgery and follow-up, I'd say she was at least 3 more months later than what I was. And the follow-up was very different. And her treatment was different because it was a different type of cancer. But when I look at, aside from that, when I look at some friends who have had breast cancer, we have a wonderful program here. But again, the timing. Now, I know if it's a serious condition and if it's life-threatening immediately, I do know that people have worked really fast. And what we have here is very good. But I still think we have such a long way to go in terms of maybe providing for the patient more so than the physicality of it.
Were you in the right place at the right time?
I definitely was. I didn't see that, though. I didn't see that till a few years ago. But I guess I have to, if I can throw this in, I had someone say something to me. Oh, you didn't have cancer that bad. Because you don't have to have chemo or you don't have to have radiation. You don't have to have that big scar on your back. So you didn't have it that bad. And I was so offended by that. And I was offended by that for a long time because I thought, yeah, I only had half my lung removed and I had to have major surgery. But I didn't have cancer that bad. But now looking back, if you can say I didn't have it that bad, no, I was really, really lucky. I was lucky I was where I was. I was in the job that I was at, so I had the benefits that I had because I did miss 2 months of work. I was so fortunate that I had the right doctors. Just, I couldn't have got any better people. And aside from that, I have a wonderful family doctor here who I'm sure would speed things right up if he had to. But again, it was the right place at the right time. It wasn't that I didn't have cancer that bad. I just had a better journey with cancer than other people did.
And how are you feeling now?
Good. Good. There's really not a lot of side effects. I do have kind of chronic changes in my lung. Shortness of breath at times, humidity and heat aren't the best. And I do Well, my surgeon put it to me this way, because I asked him, I said, what's my lung capacity going to be like? Like, am I going to have to go around with tubes on and I can't breathe and so on and so forth? And he said, I have taken you from a V8 engine down to a V6. He said, what you do with that V6 is up to you.
You can still do a lot with the V6.
So he told me I could be better with the V6 than someone at the V8 who didn't do anything. So I try to do my part. I have hits and misses like everybody else, but so far my tests have been good. And I get a yearly chest x-ray. I have a CT scan every 3 years. And it's been good. Knock on wood.
What have you taken away from the experience that you want healthcare providers to know?
Well, now let me see. I think I'll have to go back to my pulmonologist, and he was from New Zealand, and he was one of the head of the lung centers out at St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver. And I think if I can say, I know they're busy, and busy just seems like kind of a trite word to say, but if they could kind of just take to get to know the patient a little bit. Like, I know you have to give information to the patient. I know you have things that you have to tell them, procedures, what's going to be done. There's a lot of information that you have to give them, but you need to remember there is way more information coming at them. Because you have all kinds of blood tests ordered. You have scans, you have MRIs, you have PET scans, you have, like, there's just so much coming at you. And I think what I appreciated from him was the fact that he found one or two little things, like Bon Jovi, to help take my mind off of what I had to process. So he found that, and he kept bringing that up, or he'd talk about his golf game, or just personal things to try and not make light of the situation, but to kind of divert your attention away from, well, what's this blood work mean, and what's that level mean, and what's that value mean, and, you know, because there's just so much of that.
And it, as you mentioned, a big challenge for you was dealing with it emotionally.
Exactly.
So did that help? Did his personal nature with you help a little bit with that?
I would say yes, because I felt secure and safe, if I have to use those two words, that when I was going to see him, I knew, okay, it might not be good news, but I kind of smiled in a way because I knew he was going to make me feel at ease, and I was comfortable with him. And when you're comfortable, you can ask the questions you need to ask. If you feel threatened or intimidated, then maybe you're going to pull back and you're not going to ask. And it's like you leave there, oh, well, I should have asked him this, you know, and you might not see him again for another 6 weeks.
What do you want patients to know?
Be proactive. Fight for yourself. Don't take no for an answer. If you don't like the answer, feel free to get a second opinion. It might not be that easy, but do your research. Don't do Dr. Google, because you're going to hear and find everything that you want to see and everything that you don't want to see. And ask around, ask different nurses, nurse practitioners, ask friends, ask colleagues, just get into the library, look at some research, look at the data, what's being done on X, Y, and Z. Like, don't just sit back and take everything they say to you as the gospel. And I'm not saying that to be facetious or anything like that. It's just you have to be your own advocate. And if it saves you 2 months from chemotherapy, and you're on there for a year, that's a success. Be your own advocate.
Having moved back to New Brunswick, do you see a disparity in the way that people can access the system and what they need for healthcare?
Well, I'm not really sure how to answer that, Hans. There's so many barriers. Social economics, different cultures, different regions. I grew up in small town New Brunswick. I mean, we're known for McCain's. And I'm 3 miles up the road from McCain's, and we don't have a hospital anymore. So when we lost our hospital, that was a huge dent in that area, because now people go to Waterville. So if you live in Perth with just a, you know, kind of like a medical center or something they have there, and you got to go all the way down to, which is like a half hour, 35, 40 minute drive in the winter. So accessibility is a big thing. And I'm really not sure what the answer is. There are a lot of barriers, and it's really hard to just isolate how people could get better access. We need family doctors. We need to be able to bring them to the province. We need to be able to give our doctors that are here with 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 patients a break, so that they can be that maybe little better GP by taking an interest in you. Because I'm sure a lot of them might like to do that, but there just isn't the time.
I think it does speak to it when you mentioned that you were so surprised with how quickly that you were being seen by all of these specialists, that in fact you thought this must be so serious that that's why I'm being seen. But it's just the nature of the way that it went in Vancouver.
But what's different out there, they have a lot of clinics where you can go in and get an X-ray or an MRI, ultrasound or whatever. You can just go into these clinics. You don't actually have to go to the hospital and get this done. They have like these centers, there is a word for them, but it escapes me right now. And they have all these other blood centers where you can go in and get blood work done. There's other centers where you can go, it's women's health, you can get mammograms, you can get pap tests, you can get ovarian cancer screening. There's a lot of things that you can get done without actually having to go through the hospital. And I think that would be great if something like that could ever happen around here.
Did you sing along to Bon Jovi that march?
I actually went both nights, and I got awesome pictures, and I bought a pair of red cowboy boots to wear. And let me tell you, I danced. And being a little bit of a groupie, I have seen him now 6 times.
6 times. John Bon Jovi, if you're listening.
Yeah.
We got a big fan here.
I'm here waiting.
Roxanne, thank you so much for telling us your story.
You're welcome.
You can be part of the solution with Impart. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you'd like to learn more or listen to previous episodes, our website is impart.team. This podcast was produced by Carrie Lynn Kalp. Thanks to our author, Juliana Prestis, and our advisor, Keith Brunt. And thanks to Local 107.3 FM for their facilities. I'm Hans Colburn. Be well.